time for more movie thoughts, reviews, and royal commentary from Richard Fitzwilliams and Natasha Wanton on the Midweek Drive.
Look, you've had a good career. I don't think you're a big bad master spy. I think you just messed up. I think you might have been angry about what's going on.
The Russians attacked our democracy.
Just before the election,
the Russians didn't attack.
Reality.
Were you surprised to see us today?
We are concerned with the leak.
An insider threat.
This is my partner. What partner? Wally Taylor.
Hey, how are you?
We have a search warrant for your house.
Oh my goodness, okay.
Would you like to see it?
Yes, please. 125 pounds, you guys. Flatter me. Sorry, I have a sense of humor.
That was on your driver's license.
That's right.
Okay, well, I lied.
Don't we all?
Reality. What if I said that you printed out classified information? That document has made its way outside of NSA. And the most likely candidate is you.
I think you know a lot more than what you're telling us at this point.
I'm trying to deploy. I'm not trying to be a whistleblower. That's crazy.
Now, why I'm here is to figure out the why behind this.
Look, I'm here.
Reality.
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 Reality. Reality.
Was there something that just pushed you over the edge on this?
Well, I don't know. Where are we going to go when we start talking about reality? What is reality? Is it like truth? Is it a nebulous concept that we maybe have a grip on or perhaps address in some way, shape or form? Maybe it's all to do with HBO. Maybe it's something completely different. Richard Fitzwilliams, what say you? Reality? Worth accessing? Or is it a case of, actually, there are a lot of things here that need to be spoken of. It's not a perfect movie. I'll give it an 8.
Well, I mean, it's firstly, Alex, I hate to begin on a note of agreement, but that is precisely what I am about to give it. In a while I've explained why, of course, it's very unusual. It's rather a powerful docudrama, and it's extremely interesting. It's directed by Tina Satter, and it's actually, the script is based on, and indeed is, so to speak, the transcript of intelligence leaked, the transcript of an intelligence leaker being interviewed by the FBI. I mean, this is part of the interrogation. Quite literally, we have cuts to various tapes and so forth, just to remind us of this. It was staged as a play, as a room, and it certainly works, I think, rather well here. In fact, I think very well. Now, reality is a person. Reality, in fact, we meet in 2017 watching the Fox News coverage on one of the actions by Donald Trump. Putting it mildly, something that you might well feel merited some response from ordinary citizens. I've only just been watching him on the television for a second. Reality is, in fact, played by Sydney Sweeney. She returns home, and then she is confronted by FBI agents. Taylor, played by Marchant Davis, and also Garrick, played by Josh Hamilton. They have a warrant to search her house and belongings, and so there's a conversation that deals with her pets, deals with also whether she's got guns and the property she does and so forth. She is, in fact, a yoga instructor, also a Farsi translator for a government contractor. She's hoping to be destroyed, deployed to Afghanistan as she speaks Pashto. Then it is revealed that, in fact, they are questioning her regarding a recent link a leak of classified government documents to an online publication. The publication is The Intercept. Initially, she's in denial. Subsequently, she has to admit, it's based on a real case, of course, as I say, and this is a transcript, they admit that she printed and that she leaked a document from the National Security Agency. And the subject of this, and there are various cuts throughout this film, but the subject is that the documents have supposedly revealed proof of Russian interference in 2016 elections in the United States. She became handcuffed. She's jailed for 4 years, which is very, very high. The same document was used on the Senate floor as evidence, and this, therefore, is a very, very provocative movie, because what you've got is a very unusual docudrama. It's basically, it makes you the judge. Is there a situation where, in conscience, it's allowable, or indeed you perhaps should leak certain information, even if it may be against the law? Or indeed, should you at all times stick by the law, however flawed that law might be? The actual sentence imposed on her was the longest ever for a civilian leaking classified information. And this, what works for this movie is that it is realistic. It indeed, as I say, it puts you into the jury box, and it turns out, subsequently reading, that linguists eavesdropped on communications in Afghanistan to identify targets for armed drones, and that also the President Trump raised doubts that Russia had anything to do with the election. But subsequently, she saw a top secret report, which is what she leaked, and exposing a White House cover-up. The case dragged on for 16 months. She suffered from depression and so forth. It's very interesting, this aspect of it, because the one flaw in this perfectly acted movie, very good supporting performances too, visually unobtrusive as it should be, the one flaw is that I gained so much more out of it by reading up about it. Subsequently, the movie does tell you in a few lines what some of what happened. It doesn't tell you, at least from the version I saw or read, all of what happened, which is absolutely fascinating. It's a very unusual way of making a movie. It's also a successful way, and it is provocative. It, as I say, it puts the questions to you. What do you think? And also, having seen the movie, you want to read up about the real reality and what happened. As I say, superlative performances and a very impressive movie. And it's fascinating to see something like this, because whoever had the idea of turning a transcript into first a play and then a film has, I think, scored. And I think that this is a sort of movie that I love going to see movies for.
Oliver Stanley, The Real Reality, which can be seen as a wonderful case of hyperbole to the max. But what about yourself? Is this something which, A, you were aware of? Or is it something which you think, oh, well, if I can recall Navalny, which I thoroughly enjoyed, maybe I should actually check out The Real Reality, or indeed just reality?
I mean, first thing I want to say is that her name being Reality is so perfect. Like, I don't think that in the writer's room when we're trying to come up with a title, I think it must have been one of the shortest conversations that a writer's room's ever had. But yeah, it does look extremely interesting. And I actually, well, I think everyone would, but like, I remember when the case was going on, I never heard her name and like the actual what was going on. I just heard about the impeaching, the election tampering itself. But yeah, definitely something I'm going to be watching once they get the chance, once they get access to the streaming service.
Of course. Exactly. These are sort of challenging aspects of life in so many ways. And when we're talking about reality, of course, are you faithful? Are you unfaithful? Are you unfaithfully yours? Have you ever, Oliver, ever actually lied or told untruths to actually support a narrative of a friend or an acquaintance or somebody you'd regard as a best friend? Or have they ever lied on behalf of you?
I feel like I'm honest, not quite to a fault. But yeah,
so and the answer is no, not as far as you're aware. Because well, it's always difficult when you're in that situation, maybe with advancing years and decades, you may well be in a situation where you find yourself in a legal quandary. If you're a judge, you know, a judge in a court of law, and you're effectively telling lies about your best friend, and then your best friend ends up being killed. Or has she been killed? Wow, there could be all sorts of other Harrys here in terms of the shock horror with respect to where we're going on that one. I still want to know, Richard Fitzwilliams, forget the death or otherwise of best friend. What about the dog? I mean, what happened to the dog with the bloody footprints in the first place? We want to find out more what happened to that and the piano wire that went missing, which meant that a piano wire thing was actually gone. Again, a challenging line, a movie which sadly, well, I don't know, sadly for me, and I'll throw my sort of score in here, it's probably a 7.5, purely and simply because I felt there were a few cliches when it came to actually chasing into the ocean with an axe man behind you. For me, that was probably stretching it a little bit too far in terms of that reality disbelief side of things there. But there's nothing wrong with what an axe man cometh, and indeed some closed circuit television. Richard, no spoilers whatsoever, please, but would you like to talk us through Unfaithfully, no, sorry, Faithfully Yours?
Alex, I firstly say that you and spoilers, you're terrible today, and Sarah's not here to try and restrain you, so I'm not sure I can even begin.
There's lots of restraining done in Faithfully Yours. People use sort of all sorts of clips to actually do that, and there's no tasers available today.
Well, may I just say firstly, can I just ask you if you've ever been on crutches having twisted your ankle?
Look, these are what I call the aspect of suspension of disbelief when you're writing and you're a deep melancholic writer. Clearly, there are issues that come to fore there.
When a character turns up and is on crutches and the next day he's chasing someone into the ocean with an axe, I put it to you...
It was a miracle recovery, Richard. That's what I thought, a miracle recovery.
I'd say it was a miracle that this film ever made Netflix. And I would further say that I'm amazed that it did so well in Holland. It's a Dutch film directed by André van Duren. Yes, there's a Judge Bodel, played by Bracker van Duisberg, and she and Isabel, played by Elise Scarp, are close friends. They have a secret agreement. They'll go on a trip and they'll have affairs, so they escape from their husbands and stay at Bodil's aunt's home. She goes to a lecture. Isabel goes to a club and strange things start to happen. This movie, firstly, it is very, very, very badly scripted. Isabel's husband, Luke, calls Bodil. Luke, played by Jules Nasser. He twisted his ankle. That doesn't put him off as a charging around the next day, I'd say. And he's on crutches. Well, so be it. Bodil has a bit of a fling with Michael, who's the lecturer, and goes swimming in the sea, coming home with the entrance of the...
And Michael's the piano player too, of course, as well. Don't forget the piano.
I found the piano very forgettable, as I found the whole movie forgettable. Quite frankly, the entrance of the home...
Richard, you'll be garrotting the movie next.
Full of blood, no Isabel. Then the police suddenly find that they're sent a phone and, in front of Bodil and also Luke and also Bodil's husband's pitched up Milan, played by Nasrid Dahar. I was very fond of this quote. This is before they show Isabel's husband that... a photograph where she's lying in a pool of blood, which I have to say that, the policeman says, you may find this quite distressing, quite distressing.
Richard, European police have a completely different sensitivity register than perhaps those in either Great Britain or South Africa. So I think we need to give them some latitude, give them some piano wire to actually expand their rope metaphor.
Well, Alex, then we must continue that photographs of after this rather strange episode, then footage from the hotel. Well, it's hard to start laughing at some of this. Suddenly crops up. Isabel, in fact, returned to her hotel room with Bodil's sister, Yara. They've had an affair. Well, Yara's arrested. Not that that detains her very long. She pitches up to tell Bodil she and Isabel were lovers, and Isabel. And she believes that the real target of this hitman was, in fact, Bodil. By now, do you care? Because it's so obvious. Firstly, most of the guys in this, as is customary, too customary in so many movies at the moment, if they're nice, like the professor, well, they're relatively...
He wasn't cheerful. That nice, Richard. He actually denied actually even knowing his...
The reason he denied knowing was infection.
That's what he said. That's what he said. He said it was to protect her. But that was just what he said. Was that what he really meant?
Well, I mean, the thing is, you're actually providing details for a mystery in a movie that has absolutely... Well, you can say it had mysteries, but they're the most unconvincing load of twaddle that I've seen in quite a long time. And it turns out that her husband, Bodil's husband, is in fact recording her affairs on tape. This, of course, is...
Because that's what he enjoys. He's a voyeur, Richard. A voyeur who enjoys seeing his wife get excited, and that excites him as well. It's perfectly logical.
It's perfectly true, but I would point out the advantage of seeing these tapes is that there's no script to go with them, so he can't hear. At least couldn't, as far as I remember. Or maybe he could, but by then I had ceased to to listen to...
You were like me, Richard, wondering what has happened to the dog.
I was wondering what had happened to the corpse, but you never know. I mean, these things, this is a movie that gives feminism a bad name, quite frankly, because it thinks that its heart's in the right place, but it is pathetically feeble because, firstly, none of these actors really can act. There's no depth in it.
Richard, it was produced by Rachel Van Bommel and Wendy Van Vaughn. I mean, you know, surely the Van Bommels and the Van Vaughns must have been, you know, thinking this is the essence of the argument over the genders. You know, this is the whole aspect of how we're switching aspects within this. It's a deep and meaningful aspect, which leads, you know, equally to the closing song, which in a kind of validation of the joy and the wonderment and all of the things that we've actually had and effectively experienced so far, effectively actually is called Victory. Victory by Nona.
The thought that I could ever again fall in love without false start, fade away all I'm remembering. I wish that I could go back in time, skip the part where I fell in love, just another stranger passing me. Oh, I find myself lying, I know this can't be right. A million different pieces inside. Victorious, you know I like to chase my luck. Victorious, I'm never gonna live a lie. Victorious. Any sound outside and cars driving by, I really tried with the sting in my eye. I don't wanna go to bed right now. I wish that I could go back in time and skip the part where I fell in love, just another stranger passing by. Victorious, you know I like to chase my luck.
victorious. I'm never gonna live a life victorious. Been pushing daisies, wasting time victorious.
Did you know? How did you listen long enough to discover Victory by Nona?
Because I always stop when I'm looking through Netflix. I will delete the jump to the next film and let the whole credit sequence play out. And I thought, that's profound. That gets an extra 0.5 for me if I'm really pushing it. It's not an absolutely 100% movie, obviously. It's not a flawed masterpiece. Well, maybe it is, but I think it addresses a lot of things to be said. If only we had our Dutch correspondents to actually give their point of view. I mean, Richard, I'm shocked at the sort of the anti-Netherlands bias that we're seeing here.
All I can say is it's a bad movie, badly scripted, badly directed, and totally undistinguished in every way. And as far as
perfect the plot, for Netflix, though.
I mean, so far as well, Netflix were promoting this, but I mean, in theory, it's an interesting plot. In practice, this is rubbish, and it's, as you know perfectly well, because I think that you've taken a devil's advocate point of view on this very topic.
I like to support the legal adversarial system that was manifested by the lead character in Faithfully Yours. She, first of all, is seen in the judge room as the judge, making lots of very profound judgments about other people. And then, of course, we realise that she's quite hypocritical in certain instances.
Well, I didn't find it convincing as a judge, simply because judges have a certain gravitas and a certain character or a certain presence. She was playing one. I cannot speculate as to why she was given the role, but it certainly wasn't acting.
Wow. Harsh words indeed for Brescia von Doesbra. Many people will say she would have been the ideal, or her character would have been ideal, to actually look after Prince Harry. But we'll come to that in a few moments. Oliver, clearly, as yet, still to access your parents' streaming service. Not that they're going to be sharing with him. It's just going to be going home for that. Once you do go through that point of view, will you be finding out what wonderments can be developed? Apart from, obviously, what happened to the dog? Faithfully Yours.
I feel like I've already experienced it. You didn't stick to no spoilers for very long.
Well, I don't know. Can you tell me what happens at the end?
No, but...
There we are, you see.
The most important question was never answered. What does happen to the dog?
This is, again, something possibly that a sequel may manifest. And I do hope, Richard, that there will be a sequel here as we find out what actually happens to the judge as she further goes through life with her voyeuristic husband and Taser. Oliver, possibly not one for yourself, or is it? I mean, it's 90 minutes of wonderful murder mystery fluff, which actually, Richard, it takes me back to the halcyon days of the 80s, such classics as Body of Evidence, such classics as White Heat and so on, where you have Madonna overacting, even Basic Instinct 1 and 2 can probably have 17.
Goodness sake, Alex, I mean, Basic Instinct had reasons to watch it. This has none whatever. They weren't perhaps going into the details, but I mean, I think I'll post you an ice pick for that comment.
Wow, there we are. That's a 1980s reference.
After that glowing endorsement, I'll probably have to give it a miss.
Yeah. Okay, well, enough of such stuff. Clearly, for the first time since Edward the... Well, actually, when he was Prince of Wales, Edward Prince of Wales in the 19th century, actually took up his shield and decided to actually go into the legal system. We've seen such fun and such jollities here with respect to the activities that's been taking place. Not just, and let's face it, Richard, we need to commend the fact that we now say Sir William Rees-Mogg as opposed to simply ordinary William Rees-Mogg. So good to see that Boris Johnson, the best Prime Minister the Ukraine has ever had, has been now effectively forced to stand down because he's been outed. And I realise you're not going to go down a political line. But when we talk about not going down a political line, what, pray tell, can we actually make, of course, of the soul who's effectively taking up the shield, the sword of justice, to effectively go head to head and actually say, I can't remember anything. It may have been. It may be this. I might be just speculating. What the hey? I don't know. It's overwhelming. What's it all about? Harry?
Well, again, I, following the reconstructions, as I did, of the courtroom, I mean, undoubtedly, he sees himself the 55-page manifesto, how vile the press was, cleaning up the media landscape. Yes, an attack on the government, which certainly was, I mean, it's important.
Rock bottom, Richard, rock bottom. And, right. and there are those of us who say, why are you actually, what's the point, Prince Harry, in actually citing a 1970s pop song by Lindsay DePaul entitled Rock Bottom? I might try and dig it out for this particular production, Oliver. Don't worry.
I can only say that so far as the result of this is concerned, we probably have to wait until September, which is a very long time. So there are others involved in the case. It was dramatic, as Alex said. It is the first royal appearance of the witness box.
Chelsea, I love you, Chelsea. I love you. Come back to me, Chelsea. Megan's all a mistake. Come back, Chelsea. Sorry. It's just channeling my inner Harry there.
Seventh as Prince of Wales in 1891, where he made a fool of himself, well, thought he did in the witness box. Certainly he appeared ill at ease and contradicted himself and so forth. The royals decided that would be the last time a senior royal appeared in court if they could help it, which on the whole is, you can see, never explain, and don't appear. However, when it came to the arguments, and Harry suing Mirror Group newspapers and the belief that the charges of phone hacking, Mirror had paid out over some 100 million to victims of phone hacking, a large number more, depending on the result of this case, 33 articles and having been chosen. And Andrew Green, KC, representing Mirror Group, and this was the sort of thing we had all the time. Harry, the only way X information could have been got was by hacking. Green, proof. Where's your proof? Harry, why don't you call the journalists? They're the ones who would provide the proof or could. Green, well, it appeared elsewhere or might have come from a third party or whatever. I mean, we'll have to see what the judge makes of this. And if he were to win it, many more cases beckon, Associated Newspapers, NGN, which is the Sun and so on. It's something that could be very, very significant. Harry sees himself clearly in a role of major campaigner here.
That's what drugs will do to you, Richard.
That case is heard next week. Harry and his visa. Did he declare his drug use when he applied? You know this, Alex.
It's quite evident he didn't, otherwise he wouldn't have been allowed in.
Not necessarily. There's a discretion here. We don't know.
Well, I can see that you're being choked with emotion in terms of the continuing saga. And if people actually want to ask the question, how low can the media go in terms of this? May I point Oliver, for instance, in the direction of GBTV, who actually have got actual dramatizations with actors portraying both the questioner and Prince Harry in the box, which I just thought, really? Seriously? That's where we've come to? Maybe
Well,
not.
Alex, I would point out Sky News. I watched it, and they had an actor playing Harry, so whereas
Yeah.
they didn't, you disprove.
I do indeed. I think, you know, enough's enough. You know, we need to allow the tragedy of Meghan to play out in its own way. And hopefully Chelsea, who will be probably saying, well, that's exactly why I made the right decision in ending that relationship, from actually, you know, opening up a whole other can of scenarios. It's the reality of the issue that's at stake here. The reality of indeed whether or not Harry and the press are faithfully yours. And on a slightly different note, it's intriguing, the Telegraph recently, now the Barclay brothers have obviously been forced to sell, that the Telegraph effectively are now sort of quite happily revealing the fact that the BBC, supposed neutral BBC, were nothing more than simply a kind of mouthpiece for the government during the whole COVID-19 lockdown scenario. That could make a great movie, Richard. I'm just saying.
It's certainly been very instructive to read, apparently, that there was a monitoring unit. Yes. I think a lot of people will be very disturbed by it.
Well, fortunately, the Midweek Drive and indeed Midweek Drive Morning Editions managed to pass all the tests. We didn't actually get sanctioned throughout our COVID period of time and effectively still kept on with our spoiler-free zones, which, as you know, Richard, is very key to the whole system. Oliver, any other thoughts that you've got with respect to Prince Harry, or would you say enough's enough? Without Meghan beside him, he's just lost.
I feel like they're both still very bad at being private citizens and staying out of the limelight. As for the BBC thing, they're labelled on Twitter at the moment, or at least last time I checked, as state-funded media, aren't they?
No, funded by the taxpayer. Yeah,
absolutely. The fact that they're not state, that's the whole essence, really. Otherwise, those of us who pay our television license would not. They should be completely neutral. This is the whole essence.
Yeah, they've been trying to get that changed. If it hasn't been changed back already.
Well, it never has been technically a notion of being a state-funded thing. It's agreed within that. However, I think it's fair to say, Richard, we're not here to talk about that other institution. They've got enough challenges that Tim Davies is trying to sort out as yet before they actually start going with respect to the former ownership of the Barclay brothers and where they're going.
It's one of the many, many mistakes that Elon Musk has made.
Any thoughts, Richard, on the recent retiring honours list by, of course, the former Premier Boris Johnson? I mean, you're normally pretty good on the gongs and the trinkets that are handed out. No suggestion of cronying at all, but sadly, nothing for Dominic Cummings.
Well, no, they fell out, but one of the problems, and this is a matter of a lot of speculation, quite literally now, for the honours to be approved, there is a committee that does this. And whereas Sunak and Johnson had a meeting, which is highly contentious, Johnson apparently says he believes Sunak would pass the whole list. Well, he handed the list to the House of Lords Appointments Commission, which he had to, and they took names off. So whose fault was it? Because were the names taken off before the Commission saw the list? It's all a matter of, there's a clash of egos. The Conservative Party has for a long time now been quite literally and almost incapable, in fact, when it comes to rift three prime ministers in a year, constant problems. When you're dealing with someone like Johnson, I think most people are probably very pleased that he's out. He had no choice but to go out simply because the House of Commons almost certainly would have voted to censure him when it comes to the report, which we haven't received yet, on Partygate. So far as the honours list is concerned, well, again, there would be a very good case for restricting prime ministerial honours lists in some form to those who'd given help in campaigns and so on, but not to donors. But it seems almost impossible to do that. And Labour's plan to reform the House of Lords, well, it only goes so far. It wouldn't affect the honours list. David Lammy was on television a short while ago mentioning this. So there is no possibility of a cleanup. Tony Blair didn't have a resignation honours list, but the likes of, say, Harold Wilson go back to the 1970s, and you had the so-called Lavender List on the Lavender note, coloured notepaper. It was rumoured of Marcia Faulkner, Harold Wilson's secretary, and
possibly a passionate confidant as well. But obviously, that was never proved or disproved. That's another speculation thing, which perhaps needs a Dutch filmmaker to really dig down deeply into the sort of faithfulness or otherwise of Harold Wilson.
Well, I can only say I actually knew Lady Faulkner. She was quite a character, according to reports, as you intimate. And she's dead, by the way, now, so there wouldn't be a suit because she was litigious. She was indeed an intimate, but that honours list was a complete disgrace. Gordon Brown had one. I don't think that was controversial. Tony Blair didn't because he knew it would be. Well, I mean, so far as Johnson's concerned, it's full of, well, you can call it cronies if you like, but supporters, and including a lot of financial supporters. It's this business of the fact that no one can prove it's contrary to the 1925 Act that you should buy or be able to buy an honour. But of course, how do you prove that someone has done so? And also, would you, I'm sure, Alex, a person of sensibility but the conscience like yourself, wouldn't deny, some say you contributed to a political party, hypothetically, but say you've been a great philanthropist too. Would you, in fact, because of that contribution, feel that you should not have a seat in the Ermine benches?
I think it would all really depend on the lacunae, the absences. I mean, I was personally very surprised. I couldn't see anything, and you might correct me on this one, Richard. I couldn't see anything, not even a CBE or an OBE, etc., for Nicola Sturgeon. No sign of anything there. I mean, surely, you know, one of our sort of keen British colleagues who surely merited something, or if not Nicola, perhaps her husband.
Yes, interesting. I think we're going to be hearing quite a lot more about perhaps both of them in the coming months. People are interested in...
Richard, we need something now that the giants, literally the giants of broadcasting and the political world of Donald Trump and Boris Johnson seem to be actually taking time out to head into the wide blue yonder. It is just one of those areas. Proof that Australia time is different from UK time. Sadly, just as we're about to wrap this whole process off, Natasha Wanton has actually joined us. Worry not, Natasha. You can still actually sort of acknowledge the fact that in terms of the running order, we've been in the midst of discussing the political debate. And again, my shock at the absence of Nicola Sturgeon from Boris Johnson's leaving honours list. But we've also got the sheer wonderment of obviously Faithfully Yours, which if you've seen on Netflix, you'll appreciate that. Whereas Richard, who are... We did. I mean, I gave it a 7 to 7.5. Richard would probably be around the 3 to 4 mark for Faithfully Yours. Wow. Primarily because of the axe-wielding soul. Did you see Faithfully Yours, Natasha? Have you got a few moments to share with us your thoughts?
I have not seen Faithfully Yours. I don't think I'm going to now, given Richard's sort of a testament to it. I did wonder, looking at it, I was concerned over the realism behind it, and I thought the plot would looked a bit unconvincing, but... Yeah, the two is quite harsh. So I'm going to have to listen back to this episode and see where it's gone so terribly wrong, Richard, aren't I really?
It is an hour and a half of your precious time. I mean, I fear you missed my review, but I was attempting to point out that with a pathetic script, with actors who are incapable of acting, and with a total lack of tension, all to show its heart is in the right place when it comes to feminism.
Richard, this is anti-Netherlands bias that's coming across here, and I will not stand for it.
I deny it totally. This is a bad film. It is a feeble movie.
You'll be saying Paul Verhoeven isn't a sensitive film director next. These are the kind of things.
I will be pursuing what happened to the dog.
Yeah, exactly. Because that what happened to the dog is fairly critical. We actually see the dog appear twice, probably the same footage used twice, first at the start and then pretty much halfway through, just before the taser makes an appearance. And I still don't know what happens to the piano wire. And as I said, sometimes if you've sprained your ankle, you do have a sharp recovery. That's all we need to say. Finally, Natasha, are you keenly awaiting what's happening with respect to Prince Harry versus the Mirror Group newspapers?
I think it's certainly a very interesting turn of events, given, you know, that this has been a long time coming and the results of it will probably set a bit of a precedent for media, etc., going forward. Look, I can sympathize with him. The idea of having my personal, you know, contact devices hacked, if that has been the case, you know, is not pleasant, and I wouldn't wish that on anybody. If that has happened, then I hope he does get recompense for it, because it should not have happened. But it will be groundbreaking going forward. As I say, the results for the implications for the media going forward, I will be interested to see.
It's a long-winded way of trying to get back your former girlfriend and person. Of course, the sheer joy of Chelsea Davy. We know this, it can happen. It's just part and parcel of the whole thing. Not that I want to sort of say anything else, but it's nice that obviously Oliver and Richard and myself realised that this was actually scheduled for one particular part of the day as opposed to half an hour later, because I see Kathy maintaining the American End has also joined us now, which is good. So it's a quick hello and a quick goodbye, Kathy, in many ways, because you've missed the reviews, which Richard has so eloquently and lucidly put together, together with the notion of what happened within the world. Oliver, just out of interest, You realised the time that was set for here was, as far as the recording is actually concerned, I did say 11, not 11:30. You did confirm this, did you not?
Yeah, I said 11 o'clock on the email, yeah. And I check every time because I'm so nervous of getting it horribly wrong.
Exactly, that's it. Just check the time, and then you know when you can actually come in. It's simple, really. That's part of the whole course. Sorry, Kathy, I realise, you know, it's the trauma of having had your first international four-star horse trial event, which the listener can obviously access as well. Yes, the Burley, Bramham horse trials. We're still sort of working through that. A wonderful thing. Horse trials, fantastic. Richard, as you know, big fan of horse trials and three-day eventing, less so when it comes to Royal Ascot. You're hurting the horses. That's all I shall say. For now, Richard Fitzwilliams, who's presumably, Richard, you're not going off to do a just say no or just stop oil protest at present. Have you got any, or are you intending to glue yourself to some National Portrait Gallery image?
No. It is a very special sapphire wedding anniversary.
Excellent. Can you reveal anything else, or is it just a case of that's all I'm saying?
No, it's the Intercontinental. It's for friends. I think it's called, the actual title of it is...
He has now left the chair that is Richard Fitzwilliams, has wandered off, allowing for the fact that this is radio and therefore having to fill for a certain time. Otherwise, there'd just be dead air going out as far as Siren Radio is concerned. But the title, Richard, is...
And the title is, I think it's... Lord, I just thought I had the invitation.
Oh, it's that excitement.
No, it's got, basically, it's 65 years and there's a special name for it.
Well... And that basically is it. 65 years and there's a special name for it is probably the movie that Richard will be reviewing next week, probably made by Dutch filmmakers, with indeed a piano wire and indeed an uncertain ending. Are they dead? Are they not dead? We just don't know.
And what Alex, you on? Cannot, Alex, you cannot say that that was a convincing ending. Come on.
I thought I was emotionally moved. I mean, I felt it was channeling the spirit of Casablanca, personally, but there we are. Natasha Wanton, Richard Fitzwilliams, Oliver Stanley, and however briefly, Kathy Manso, huge thanks. Take care and keep watching those movies.
Started again with the sympathy. Oh, I get it. best things about the 21st century has been the variety of creative ways radio has evolved.
Really? That's one of the best things? It's not been the best century, then.
It's been slim. But the legacy of Marconi is in good hands with Alex Lefchik and the Midweek Drivettes. So we got that going for us.
Which is nice.
Now, back in the day, I was always arguing that we really should actually have the three-letter acronym KPL, i.e. kilometers per liter, rather than MPG, miles per gallon. I think I lost the argument a long time ago, but it is just one of the actual queries and questions in terms of TLAs or three-letter acronyms and so on that might confuse people if you're thinking about buying a car. And accordingly, we've got two fabulous individuals to actually talk about some of these challenges, especially when a recent survey has suggested that 3 in 4 UK motorists have no idea what APR actually is. Well, we're delighted to welcome motoring expert extraordinaire, the fabulous Vicky Butler-Henderson. How are you, Vicky?
Oh, good morning, AL. VBH here. I'm tip-top, thanks.
Hey, spot on there from an ostrich. Questions taken readily in courageous hands, but what the hey. And we've got also from the Zopa Bank, the Chief Commercial Officer there, or CCO. That's Tim Waterman. How are you, Tim?
Hi, Alex. I'm very well, thanks. Good to talk to you today.
Vicky, let's turn to you first. As I say, I acknowledge that we're never going to get to a stage post-Brexit where kilometres per litre, which surely would have made more sense than miles per gallon, would ever be incorporated. But were you shocked by these findings that, nearly 75%, three quarters of UK motorists, no idea what APR is?
I know this is a sad state of affairs and something that we hopefully correct today. This is research that's been done by Zopa Bank, which shows that many of us find the whole buying a car process intimidating, whether we're not quite sure how to check a car or we're embarrassed to negotiate or we don't understand things such as APR. Alex, I must ask you, do you understand APR?
Annual percentage rate, or in other words, the percentage that effectively you'd pay on your car agreement if you actually purchased it over a period of time and so on. It's the sort of percentage costs that can be quite crippling, of course.
Yep, but it's also like the standard way that we can all compare the cost of how much that we're going to borrow. So it's their sort of the industry's standard figure in a percentage form. So that's the big thing that we all should look at to start with when we want to buy a car. First of all, how much can we afford? Because it's all very well going into a Ferrari and a Lamborghini dealership if you haven't got the finances, sadly, to support that. So the first thing you need to do is sort your finances out before you then do your terrific research and the super fun bit of choosing the car.
And of course, we then come around to the notion of what is it you're looking for? Is it high performance, high mileage? Is it gas guzzler? Is it high carbon footprint? Is it low carbon footprint? I often find that some of the other aspects which are worth noting are things like the insurance category that falls into, the ways in which, obviously, how sustainable is it in terms of the aspects of the whole side of things there. Any other aspects, Vicky, that from your own point of view, you think you also should consider the notion of cc or cubic capacity if you're looking for engine size?
Well, I think you need your car to be fit for purpose. So when you have got your finances in order, you then work out what sort of car you want. If you're someone who needs to take a golf club with them everywhere, take your golf clubs to the dealership and make sure they will fit in that car. Or if you need a pram, you've got certain car seats, take them with you when you go to choose your car, because you need that to be fit for purpose.
Tim, as Chief Commercial Officer for Zopa Bank, does this fill you with joy or despair? Is it a case of, if it's joy, you think, well, if they don't understand these terms, we can tell them anything, basically, and they'll believe it? Or is it a case of you're quite sad, really, that people haven't actually done their research when it comes to buying a car?
Yeah, it's quite the opposite. At Zopa, we're really focused on ensuring that customers get great value and simple, fair and transparent products. So we're really focused on driving change in this industry and ensuring that when consumers take car finance products, that they understand what they're getting. And that enables them to kind of go into a dealership and negotiate with confidence and improve that overall buying experience.
So why do so few people actually understand financial terms such as APR?
Yeah, I think ultimately people want to buy a car, and the finance proposition is really there to facilitate that. So the typical car buyer will often take 6 weeks to research the car that they're buying, but actually won't give much consideration to the finance itself. So our advice to consumers actually is, as well as researching the car, research your finance options too. That way, when you go into a dealership, you're much more empowered, and you sort of take some of the anxiety out of that buying process.
Now, Vicky, since we last spoke, a huge change has occurred in my own life, because the VW Urban Fox that has served me well since indeed
Foxy.
Exactly 2006, I felt actually it was time to move into a different area. So I've now moved into a Kia Picanto, which obviously, you know, through a whole base of this, I've got a nice £1,000 package for the Urban Fox, which could then go into other sort of aspects within the Kia Picanto and so on. What should people consider if they're considering a purchase of a used car? I mean, is it a case of, you know, do all your checks, make sure it's from a legitimate, authentic buyer, make sure that all those things are there. And obviously, as you said, make sure you've got the finances to be able to cover it outright, basically.
Yeah, well, the Zopa Bank also checks out the cars and the dealership, so that also gives you peace of mind. But also, you've been very smart in choosing a Kia, because it offers a 7-year warranty. So even if you've bought the car, which is maybe 3 years old, you have still got a manufacturer warranty there to back you up as well. So clever you.
Well, you know, every so often the stars align and you get a right decision, which is all good. You know, that's important, really. I put it down to being inspired by yourself, Vicky, in previous interviews, but what the heck. If we're looking to actually ease the confusion around the car buying process, because it can be a little bit confusing. And I must admit, one of the things that has changed drastically over the years is the fact that so much now, such as road tax and so on, it's all done online. Which can, you know, if you haven't got the app and you're sorting out other bits and pieces, or your mobile phone isn't up to spec, et cetera, it can be a bit challenging. Any thoughts from that point of view, or should it be a case of go to Zopa Bank, they'll handle everything?
Yeah, absolutely. We recommend that customers visit Zopa.com, and we've provided lots of tools online that enable customers to select the right finance product for them. And as Vicky has mentioned, there are lots of aspects to our proposition that mean that we make car buying much kind of simpler and fairer for consumers as a result.
And I've got to say, Tim, did you score 100% on Vicky's car buying quiz, knowing what MPG, PCP, HP, CC and APR are?
Just about, although I sort of live and breathe this stuff every day.
Well, yeah, but that it could be very challenging, and I didn't want to put you on the spot, really.
It is.
That point of view, so I assumed it was all going to be good. Vicky, any other sort of advice you'd like to have or would like to share with our listener in terms of if they are thinking, yeah, we should actually go and go for a new car? I mean, should they go electric? Is that, again, another sort of aspect? Or is that a case of, whoa, it's up to each individual to decide where they're going to put their pounds and pennies?
It's up to you totally. You know, if you've got a terrific accessible plug for recharging or home charging wall box, then electric is potentially a good option to go for. But maybe a hybrid car, which is a mix of electric power and petrol or diesel, so that there are cars that you don't ever have to plug in, but you can use the hybrid power. Some you do have to plug in. It's up to you and how seriously you want to take, you know, the electric side of things. Also, I would recommend that you absolutely go for a test drive before you make your final purchase, because some cars just potentially might not be the best fit for you, even if you super desire them. So definitely go for a test drive. And if you're feeling unsure and you need a bit more guidance and reassurance, then try and take a knowledgeable friend with you and when you go and check the cars over.
Yeah, absolutely. Tim, how can people find out more details about Zopa Bank?
Yep. Simply go to Zopa.com and you can find more about our products there.
And for the ever-growing number of Vicky Butler Henderson fans, or Butler Hendersonettes, basically, as we can refer to them, where can people follow you good self, Vicky? Are you on most of the socials?
Yep, I'm on the socials, and also YouTube, Vicky Butler Henderson, the car girl. And we're filming a new series of Fifth Gear in June, so look out for that on Discovery towards the end of the year.
You could almost hear the cheers going up nationwide.
Yay!
Yay, coming back. Vicky Butler Henderson, motoring expert extraordinaire, and Tim Waterman from Zopa Bank, chief commercial officer there. Huge thanks and happy driving.
You too.
Thank you. Performance tire specialist.
fun.